New Cyberpunk 2077 gameplay, and more coming up on today's episode of Lace and Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the show's World's episode. Only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. If you couldn't tell already, I'm trying to figure out what's going on. But I do know my name and I do know the show. This is Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe button right now so that you don't miss out on the latest. We do this on the daily around here, so we would hate for you guys to miss out. Speaking of what to miss out on, did you know that we currently have a giveaway going on this month? Yes, you only have a mere several days left to enter. For full details and to enter, go to technewsgadget.net/giveaway. And we got a lot of people signed up and excited about it already. So go ahead and give that a look. technewsgadget.net/giveaway. Giveaway ends and at the end of August. And then we will be giving away the prize. And so yeah, don't want you guys to miss out on that. Today's feature story, we'll be taking a look at Cyberpunk 2077's new gameplay. We'll be getting into more of that. We'll also be taking a look at an iPhone hack that's at least been going on for the past 2 years, just finally broke in terms of what's going on. So we'll find out exactly what's going on. We'll also be taking a look at Facebook research using Minecraft to train AI. See, I guess Minecraft isn't completely useless. I mean, I knew for the longest time it wasn't, but it's just stupid notch. Anyways, that's a different story. We'll also be taking a look at Skype messaging getting some much needed upgrades. We'll also be taking a look at Roomba's first autonomous lawnmower, the iRobot mower something. We'll be getting into that. We'll also be taking a look at gaming news. World of Warcraft Classic has its first level 60 player. And finally, we'll be taking a look at, well, Destiny 2 will include season passes as part of its free-to-play move. But before we can get into all of that, let's take a look back on today in tech history. All right, today is August 30th, 2019. On this day in history, in 1969, the first interface message processor, IMP, is delivered to Leonard Kleinrock's research group at UCLA. The IMP was a device that would interconnect networks between research facilities on the developing ARPANET, the precursor to the internet. As a packet switching service, the IMP can be considered the first generation of what we now call network routers. The second IMP was delivered to the Stanford Research Institute on October 1st, 1969, and the first message between the two was sent on October 29th, 1969, which is now considered the first message ever sent on the internet. And finally, on this day in history, in 1907, John Mockley was born. This date marks the birth of John Mockley, who, with J. Presper Eckert, built the ENIAC. If you don't know what that is, you seriously need to do your history. The first large-scale electronic calculator. Yes, it's a calculator. You think I'm making this? Go look this up. Mockley received his PhD in physics at Johns Hopkins University and took a position teaching physics at Yersinus College. Because his meteorological work required extensive calculations, he began to experiment with alternatives to mechanical equipment. In 1941, he went to a summer course at the Moore School of Electrical Engineering at the University of Pennsylvania. He was asked to stay as an instructor, which he did. That year, Mockley wrote a report outlining his ideas for a machine to help calculate ballistic tables for the war effort, a report that helped the Moore School win a contract for the ENIAC. Mockley worked on a successor to the ENIAC, the EDVAC, and a commercial UNIVAC 1. He died January 8th, 1980. So, in case you're wondering, this is a guy behind large-scale computers, at least. With that out of the way, let's head on over to today's feature story. And before we begin, if you guys are interested in any of the articles that we cover today, head on over to technewsgadget.net, and there you can get the show notes for this and any other episode you may have missed. It's conveniently right there at your fingertips, so you can click and read the articles if you want. You can listen to any audio if there's any, watch any videos if there are any pictures, or read the text. Up to you. I leave the option open to you. So we'll be looking at Cyberpunk 2077's new gameplay showing Pacifica Combat customization, and more. So PAX West is currently underway, and CD Projekt Rec kicked it off with an extended look at Cyberpunk 2077 gameplay during a live stream. The video footage shown during the stream was very similar to what was shown behind closed doors at, well, E3, and more recently, Gamescom. But for those who weren't at the show and able to access the private demos, it was an exciting look at what the game will have to offer. A lengthy gameplay video is available to rewatch above, and it's an article by GameSpot, and you'll get to see everything from Pacifica, a small section of Night City where the game takes place, to the gangs that inhabit it, the character customizations, and a lot more. There's also a brief overview of how you can use futuristic technology to complete missions and a tease of the branching storylines. Pacifica is one of Night City's 6 unique districts and was designed to be a tourist hotspot. However, funding was pulled and what was meant to be a crown jewel of tourism has become an almost post-apocalyptic wasteland where expectations and reality collide wildly to result in an ongoing bulk of disappointment. Pacifica is dangerous to those unfamiliar with it, but its local markets are good for finding cyberware. In terms of gangs, a group called the Animals have moved in for reasons unknown. The district is predominantly ruled by the Voodoo Boys. However, currently in conflict right now, the Voodoo Boys are the most skilled at using the net and mainly made up of Haitians who arrived en masse after the environmental changes resulted in Haiti being completely flooded some time ago. They usually don't work with outsiders, but are making an exception for V, which is a character that you control. In a discussion held after the gameplay demo was shown, senior level designer Miles Tost discussed how CD Projekt Red approached encounters and mission design, saying the team used a simple scenario to engage creative thinking and encourage non-linear designs for missions. The scenario was effectively imagining the player has to go through a door and kill a character on the other side, but in going through the door, the player would be stripped of all weapons. With that rule and context established, the team began thinking about what different means they could implement to make the player get over this challenge and complete their mission, which naturally led to non-linear design. Quest designer Philip Weber said that Night City is very large and dense, and although there are fast travel options, CD Projekt Red has filled it with interesting things to see and experience, so you'll probably have to explore a lot of it on foot for hours on end. The developer has city planners working on Cyberpunk 2077 to help make it feel like a real, believable location. Districts also have a character called a Fixer who can give you jobs, which can be street stories or a side quest. Following The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, CD Projekt Red set up a team to work on these side quests, which no doubt means there will be plenty for you to do outside of the main story. Life paths were also a subject of discussion during the stream. These serve as a starting point for a character, and over the course of the game, you will develop this through your actions. There are 3 main ways to go through the story, but a player can mix and match along the way, but your chosen life path will always be represented in conversations and quest branches. It's important to allow players to roleplay their character, explained quest designer Pavel Sasko, and the video above explains that as well. In terms of other news, the upcoming action RPG has dropped some other options. I won't talk about here. They're expected to launch on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One on April 16th, 2020. The game is also scheduled to release for Google Stadia in 2020 as well. So, if you're interested, there's links, there's videos, there's photos. All of that, and you can see all of that that's going on. Thank you, PAX West, for finally giving us a little bit more of an insight to Cyberpunk 2077. With that, wrapping it up, that's kind of my thoughts, and that's the article. Is there something that we missed? Is there something that you're looking forward to in Cyberpunk 2077? Let me know down in the comments or on Twitter at TechNewsGadget. I'd love to hear what you guys think about this game. This is a game that got a lot of hype around it. At least for this summer so far. So as long as it lives up to the hype and progression continues, we should be looking towards a nice release date in the spring of 2020. Moving on. All right, moving on to some tech news. Well, apparently hackers breached iPhones for years, according to Google. Hackers planted spyware on iPhone's users' devices over a 2-year period by exploiting a vulnerability in a technology's operating systems, Google said on Friday. The bad actors targeted a group of infected websites that, when visited by iPhone users, attacked the devices and, in some cases, installed malware According to Ian Beer of Project Zero, a team of Google security analysts that investigates cybercrime, there is no target discrimination. Simply visiting the hacked site was enough for the exploit server to attack your device, and if it was successful, install a monitoring implant. We estimate that these sites receive thousands of visitors per week, Beer wrote in a blog post. Now, boy. Using the implant, hackers could access Apple customers' data, including their passwords and personal contacts, as well as messages sent through iMessage, WhatsApp, Gmail, and Google Hangouts, according to Project Zero researchers. Almost every version of Apple's iPhone operating system, from iOS 10 right through to the latest version of iOS 12, was vulnerable, he said. Still, it's unclear how many users might have been affected. So, keep in mind, this is an old bug, but a new hack, and I don't know why this is... Why is this playing? Why are you playing? No, don't play. Now, the security bugs Beer identified aren't new, but rather exploited in some novel ways. Ian shows this is the first time these type of vulnerabilities have been used out on the wide internet, where if the malicious code was present on a certain website that was accessed, the unsuspecting user would be infected and remain blissfully ignorant of it, said operating systems internals researcher Jonathan Levin. In this case, no user intervention, such as a prompt to click on a link or tap to install an app, was required for an iPhone to get infected. The scope of the hack suggests it was backed by a nation rather than an individual. Levin said it requires a lot of research, and there has to be an end-game motive for this, he told CBS Money. It is possible that those behind the hack targeted a specific demographic, or maybe interest groups. Personal hunch, because of the level of proficiency and efficacy of the exploit, is that this is not the work of your average hacker. See, there's kind of like more top-level ideas going on here. Neither is there a surefire way for users to protect themselves against security breaches, Beer said. All that users can do is to be conscious of the fact that mass exploitation still exists and behave accordingly, treating their mobile devices as both integral to their modern lives, yet also as devices which, when compromised, can upload their every action into a database to potentially be used against them. Google said it reported its findings to Apple in February, after which the tech giant released an updated operating system to fix the flaws. Now, with that being said, Android's no safer. The takeaway shouldn't be, well, I'm going to use Android from now on because it's more secure. Far from it. He said, similarly, and or possibly worse bugs exist in Android and other operating systems as well. Google Project Zero simply chose to highlight iOS this time around, but they are keeping an eye. Apple claims to be the most secure operating system, and for good reason. Apple genuinely invests extreme efforts in securing iOS on multiple layers down to their proprietary hardware, and in some aspects are still way ahead of Android, according to Levin. But outside of that, if you're not familiar with a site or you feel weird, something not right about tapping on a link to go to a site on your phone, don't just save yourself the time and trouble and the hassle, and you probably save yourself from being hacked. All right, moving on. Facebook research is using Minecraft to train AI. If you don't see the reaction to my face, you can do so over at youtube.com/technewsgadget. Apparently, a team of Facebook computer scientists is trying to build an advanced new AI assistant, and they're using Minecraft to do it. Now, the ultimate goal is to create an assistant that can handle a wide variety of tasks, and AI algorithms are generally just good at one thing and learn more as it interacts with humans, according to MIT. First up is building a bot that can build anything you want to in the Lego-like game Minecraft. In research published to the preprint server ArcXiv, the researchers write that there's a nearly limitless number of possible tasks in Minecraft. Minecraft players are creative, and a diversity of player-built objects in Minecraft is astounding, they write. These include landmarks, sculptures, temples, roller coasters, entire cityscapes, pianos, musical instruments, and you can get some really complex binary switches going on to actually do computer code. It's crazy. Now, understanding human speech is more difficult for a computer than it may seem, even within the confines of a Minecraft server. In the game, players can explore a virtual world, harvest resources, craft tools, and build impossible blocky structures. The challenge for the AI is parsing those requests. Even when telling the AI to build a structure with precise specifications, the bot would need to know what each word means and what the structure should look like, while distinguishing among measurements, instructions, and any other context the player might throw at them. So, obviously, there is more to this report at MIT Technology Review. But I just wanted to cover this here for you guys, for those of you who were interested. I mean, it's not, I don't dump on Minecraft every single time. I dump mainly on Notch, and I dump also on Microsoft, because they have no idea what the heck they're doing. Case in point, Facebook is, and they know what to do, and so they're trying to figure out how to train AI to do complex stuff in Minecraft. So, see, it might just happen years down the road that I'll say I was right this whole entire time, and you can quote me for this, saying that Minecraft was eventually the world's downfall in how Terminator started. No, I'm kidding. But now at least I said it, now I'm on record for it. But even if it never happens, it never happens. I'm fairly confident it won't happen. But you never know. I'm just kidding. All right, moving on. And I can tell the transition didn't work out, so I'm going to punch my screen later. Skype messaging is getting some much needed upgrades for those of you who still use Skype, actually making it a lot easier now. Most people still see Skype as their go-to app for free video calls rather than an app for messages like iMessage or WhatsApp. Oh, not entirely true. This could very likely change. The Microsoft-owned company today unveiled some new features that will allow its chat tool to hold its own against the major standalone messaging apps. You still got to beat out Discord, and it's all I'm going to say there. You completely bypass Discord. Users will now be able to save draft messages, display multiple photos and videos, preview media files, and more. The new features will be available on both Skype's desktop client and the mobile app. In addition to saving messages as drafts, users can bookmark messages by right-clicking or long-pressing the field. You can also access these messages in a new folder marked Bookmarks. Sending multiple photos or videos should also be easier with the update. When you want to send multiple photos or videos to a group of friends or family, Skype will automatically organize them in an album so they won't clutter up your group conversation thread. You can also preview any photos or media you send so you don't accidentally send something to the wrong person. A pretty clever new feature is a split window for desktop version of Skype. This allows you to view your contact list and conversations in separate windows, except I don't think that's how it used to look like. Oh, for crying out loud. This should prevent any mix-ups when you're messaging to several different people at once. As all messaging apps make the shift to becoming multifunctional tools with voice, video, and text capability, it makes sense for Skype to unveil some updates. And before they fall well behind the curve, thank goodness these came out. You can access these new features on the latest version of Skype on all platforms. And if you don't have the update already, it should be rolling out to you shortly. All right, moving on to some gadget news. Well, we dug up more about the Roomba Maker iRobot's first autonomous lawn mower, and it's called the Twin-Bladed Terra. And for those of you interested who are listening on the podcast currently, yeah, youtube.com/technewsgadget for all that. But I get it. If you're on the go and you're like, I don't have time to watch the whole show right now, by all means, head on over to latestintechnews.com and subscribe. We're available in any app that you wish to listen to the show in. So, in January, Roomba maker iRobot announced its next autonomous chore-doing robot, a lawnmower called Terra. Autonomous lawnmowers aren't exactly new, but Terra is different. Unlike most robot lawnmowers, it uses wireless beacons to understand what your yard looks like, rather than relying on a long, cumbersome wire that's around the edges of your lawn. Well, as we heard, Terra was in beta. Now, iRobot tells The Verge that the beta is progressing well and expects to begin selling the Terra in the US in 2020, but they currently wouldn't reveal any pricing. After digging through some FCC communication filings and some Terra support articles on iRobot's website and fact-checking a few things with iRobot, it's easier to understand how it might work. Keep in mind, these details may not be final. User manual and support articles they dug up might be placeholders, or they might have been just for the beta. First off, those beacons may be a seemingly simple way to define a yard for the Terra, but they could be more complex than they appear. One support article says the Terra should be in sight range of 3 beacons at all times to best function, and another article says that the number of beacons needed depends on the complexity of the yard. iRobot wouldn't say how many beacons are required for an average lawn. Unlike some other robot lawnmowers, the Terra user manual says the Terra and its beacons must be installed by a professional so the robot can properly mow your yard. This won't cost more at launch, though. iRobot says it will initially provide the installation and a training session to customers. Also, some Terra models will have a Bluetooth remote that allows users to drive the twin-bladed robot. According to confirmation by iRobot, the FCC filings show that the remote connects via Bluetooth, and TechCrunch says that you can stash it inside the top of the robot next to the other controls. The FCC filings indicate the likely spot for the remote and a switch that puts the lawnmower into remote control mode. And we got an image on the screen here for us, but it's from the user manual. It may or may not be a placeholder and may or may not be subject to change. Now, after the Terra is done mowing, the user manual says it will return to a charging base. iRobot tells the Verge the base will plug into a standard electrical outlet. It'll also return if the battery runs low and continue mowing from where it left off once the battery is charged again. Now, if you're wondering where the Terra stores grass clippings, we now know that it doesn't. Support documents say that Terra will micro-mulch the grass it cuts, unlike other robot lawnmowers. That should mean fairly tiny shavings of grass will settle on your lawn. Now, I want to preface this by saying that's not a bad thing. It's actually a very good thing. Grass clippings are good for your yard. Just don't go crazy with them, but they are good for your yard because they're in what's just been chopped up in cutting your grass are vital nutrients and things that, you know, the grass needs. So obviously, if you take it away and remove it, well, you're causing a problem because you're starving the grass. It would be like somebody giving you an entire meal and then taking away half of it and saying, well, you're going to just belch it up anyways. And you're like, well, that's rude. Well, yeah, that's essentially what you're doing to the grass. So imagine this. The next time you're out cutting your grass and you happen to remove all the grass clippings, just imagine every single blade of grass screaming in anger at you. And maybe you'll remember next time, maybe I should leave the clippings on the grass because it's good, especially for all the nutrients that are on the blades that you just cut up. Leave them in the grass. They will decompose and vanish without a trace. I guarantee you won't even notice. And then the grass will actually get its full meal, just like you would if you actually had a full meal instead of half of it taken out. Anyways, I had to say that because I've been cutting grass for, it's kind of what I started out in terms of business and the side projects that I did, but it always drove me nuts when people are like, make sure you just put it in the bag because I don't want grass clippings on the yard. Oh, for crying out loud. Okay, I'm going to continue on here before I actually flip my lid again about something else. The Terra mysteriously has two different battery ratings for the same battery. It's either 98 watt hours or 92 watt hours. iRobot wouldn't comment on which one is the actual rating. The user manual says that the beacons use standard AA batteries and they should be charged once a year. In January, iRobot said that the Terra should work in inclement weather, and its label seems to back that up with an IP55 printed on it, likely indicating an IP55 progress or ingress protection rating. This means that the Terra should be protected from most debris and low-pressure jets of water, so it'll probably work when it's raining. iRobot wouldn't confirm the rating yet, but if you have cold winters, you should not keep the Terra outside. In a support article, they recommend, obviously, if you're not going to leave your lawnmower outside, bring the robot and its beacons inside for the winter. Here's something interesting. If someone steals a Terra from your yard, you'll probably be satisfied to know that they won't be able to do anything about it. iRobot confirms something we spotted in a support article. The Terra has theft protection software that makes it inoperable if it's placed in a yard it's not mapped for. Sadly, it seems like you won't be able to see a live tracker of the Terra mowing in the iRobot home app for a support article, but that would be a lot of fun. Obviously, if you just avoid being lazy for like 2 minutes, you can actually get up off the couch, walk over to the window, or go outside and go, yep, there it is, caught in the grass. So, for crying out loud, if you can afford a Terra lawnmower robot and the beacons in the yard to cut it in, you just go outside, for crying out loud. It's not gonna kill you. Okay, moving on. All right, moving on to some gaming news. The first player has hit level 60 in World of Warcraft Classic. The race is on. World of Warcraft Classic is a refreshing return to form for many players and those waiting hours on end in the queue just to log in. But while most of us are killing kobolds and crafting potions, streamers and pro players are racing for world first. Jokerd is the first play to reach player. You could update the article there a little bit. Is the first player to reach level 60, a feat which drew a sizable audience on Twitch. And yeah, some people were watching it live. Jokerd pulled off the achievement by spamming area of effect attacks on mobs, a technique which hasn't been improved over World of Warcraft Vanilla's release due to a new server architecture method the world's top rating guild, has been hosting streams based around the Race to 60 in a partnership with the World Showdown of Esports. Next up, players will begin to play through dungeons and raids. Players will be looking to take down Onyxia and Regnaros, the toughest bosses currently in the game. For now, Jerkert has claimed his crown by playing a Frost Mage, a class capable of controlling massive crowds of mobs and whittling them down over time. World 2nd and 3rd are still up for grabs, and players will be continuing to race through the current classic content. And here it is, photo and everything. It looks like he's a bald dwarf mage. Oh, gosh. Gnome, sorry. It's been a while. Can you tell? I haven't played World of Warcraft in a while. Don't kill me. It's not my fault, okay? Gosh, I can only do so much in a day. I'd love to have one of my clones go around and play World of Warcraft and be like a Chinese farmer. Gold farmer, that is. But Jokerd celebrated his achievement by traveling through Stormwind with other players piling on top of him to create a makeshift parade. Then he attempted to delete his character, which is an impressive power move that was blocked by the presence of mail in his mailbox. It's like winning a sports car, trying to drive it into a lake, but getting foiled because you're out of gas. Fortunately or unfortunately, players are spamming Jokerd with mail to ensure he cannot clear his inbox, delete his character, and log out. So there's actually a video that goes along with it too, if you think I'm making this up. So he's getting quite upset about that. It's funny. World of Warcraft Classic is currently enjoying a very successful launch, with login queues reflecting the demand from players. The game is also popping on Twitch, a platform that did not exist during Vanilla's original launch. World of Warcraft currently has 400,000 viewers, dwarfing titles like Fortnite, Apex Legends, and Overwatch. And good for them. Good for them. Finally, a good launch that I guarantee you, when I get into it, all the fun that could have been had and the, I don't know, fun of the moment, it'll have gone and vanished, and people will be moving on back to other games. But I don't know, maybe I'll hop in, see what all the fun's all about. If I do, and you are playing, let me know. I would love to join up with your clan or guild or team, just hang out and play. It'll definitely take me back a decade, because I think that's when I first started. No, a little bit more than that. Yeah, a little bit more than that, maybe a decade and a half. And moving on to our final article, Destiny 2 will include season passes as part of its free-to-play move. And now that Bungie decided to figure it out and do things properly, and that the base Destiny 2 is free-to-play, how will Bungie give you a reason to keep paying beyond major expansions? Well, by borrowing a page from Fortnite. Wow! Incredible, right? Bungie has outlined its revamped approach to seasons in year 3 of Destiny 2, and the focus is on a $10 season pass that introduced a seasonal matchmaking activity with chances at fancier loot, easier access to special gear, and perks like exotic ships and ornaments. You may also have special events like the exotic weapon quest in the first phase of year 3, Season of the Undying, if it's kind of included if you buy Shadowkeep. The developers stress that they want a larger chunk of the nice gear to be earned by people who are playing, not coughing up cash, and you'll still get sweet items as you advance through the ranks on the free track, and people on the pay track will get loot first if they're playing often. Now, there are, however, plans to introduce a catch-up mechanic that lets you buy ranks late into a season. You won't be completely stuck if a busy life prevents you from ranking up the usual ways, so hopefully it's offset, and then you can remain on the same level as your friends. You can also expect a constantly shifting experience. Activities will go away, and the game universe may change permanently. Every player will have access to a free seasonal artifact that they can level up to unlock gear mods, but those mods will go away once the season is over. Thankfully, legendary and exotic gear needed to remain competitive, and they will be re-earnable within a few months if you missed it during a given season. On top of all this, Bungie has outlined just what free Destiny 2 players can expect on top of all the year 1 content. They'll receive the opening mission for Shadowkeep, the option to patrol the moon, 2 new strikes, 2 Crucible maps from the original Destiny, and Crucible changes that include the elimination mode in Crucible Labs. You'll also have free earnable rewards that include the exotic weapon Iriana's Vow, yep, and access to core Shadowkeep era features like Armor 2.0, customization, and finishers, and that's something we covered in a previous episode. Bungie stressed that many of the familiar events from previous years of Destiny 2 will remain, such as holiday events, secret missions, and dungeons. The season revamp is an evolution and an experiment that aims to keep everyone aligned and advance the story. In other words, it's using the split with Activision as an opportunity to harmonize gameplay, reel in players who might have been disaffected by previous approaches, reel them back in, and actually figure out, okay, so we have a core player base here. How can we keep this base engaged? How can we attract new players in? And how can we keep things, you know, interesting, fun, lively, without becoming stale, boring, and dull? Not that Bungie had much of a choice but to shake things up, obviously. While the game has many loyal players, it didn't grow as much as it had hoped. But this might stand a better chance of attracting new players. And with that, that wraps up this episode of Delays in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday. Delays in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, let us know by clicking that like button and leaving a comment if you're watching today's video via YouTube. But if you're listening via the podcast, hey, could you leave us a review out on Apple Podcast or wherever you're listening? It'd be greatly appreciated. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. Oh, and share this episode with a friend. I'm your host, Taylor America, and remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.